Welcome to the Organize 365 podcast. I'm your host, professional organizer, productivity expert, and motivational speaker, Lisa Woodruff. This podcast will help you embrace progress over perfection and create lasting functional organizing in your home. I have so much to share with you, so let's get started. Kate, welcome to the Organize 365 podcast.
Thank you for having me.
All right. So this is your first time on the podcast.
Yep.
So we have to know, how did you first find Organize 365?
I think it was a lucky Facebook ad. I'm on Facebook all the time and I follow all their links. Yeah. I think it was just a Facebook thing that came up for Sunday Basket. I was like, ooh, this is interesting. And I clicked on it and got the Sunday Basket. And then within weeks I was all access. And just like
that ad worked really well.
It worked really well. So that was a very lucky Facebook ad. So it was in the middle of COVID. So it was a great time for me to kind of be thinking about my house because I was living in it more hours. And then suddenly I was like, ooh, I'm gonna use this for school. And then I invested in the teacher workbox. So then I kind of started making my system and making it work.
Okay. So since you haven't done a Wednesday podcast before, can you tell us the people that live with you in your household?
No one, just me. my cat, who's actually trying to join the video as we speak, but yeah, it's just me and my cat. So it's just, I'm pretty easy to do in the house, but I actually taught my mom how to do it. And so she does it and she just has her and my dad, but I wish I'd had it a long time ago. And I'm sure she wishes she had it when she had three kids. So
you found value in the Sunday Basket and the Productive Home Solution being a single woman living by yourself.
Yeah. Okay. My house is,
tell me about that.
Like, I don't put a lot of energy into my house because I don't live in it. I work so much that I come home and I slept in it for so long. And then COVID came around. I'm suddenly forced to be in my house all the time.
Okay.
And I was suddenly like, oh, this needs to get better.
And tell us about your house. Where do you live in the United States and what kind of a dwelling are you in?
So I live in a townhouse in Aurora, Colorado. So it's perfect because it's 2 bedrooms, 3 bathrooms, and
that's a lot of bathrooms.
Yeah.
I think there are people who want to move in with you right now.
Right. Yeah. I have an extra bedroom that's a guest bedroom when I need it and an extra guest bathroom. So it's fantastic, but it's full of my stuff. Because I just start pushing stuff into, like, my guest bedroom is my hot mess room. And so that was also something last summer. I had someone living with me. And so I had to get everything organized super fast.
Okay.
So I was like, okay, have to empty a room.
How long have you been there?
8 years.
Okay. So a while.
8 years ago. Yeah.
So how long have you been in education and tell us all the things about that? Who do you teach? How long have you been teaching? What grades? How many different buildings? All of it.
Oh, all the questions. So this is my 15th year of teaching. I teach high school. I did 4 years of physical science. So like freshman earth science, chemistry, and physics. And then I got a job as a computer science teacher. My original degree is in computer engineering. So I'm an engineer. I'm a programmer by trade.
Wow.
And then decided to be a teacher. So then I got the job. I teach at Overland High School in Aurora, Colorado. And so it's in one of the bigger districts in Denver. And I love it. It's so cool to teach computer science. And so I've been doing that for 11 years, kind of part-time. I've taught math. I've taught physics, all sorts of crazy. Last year I was in 3 schools. This year I'm in 3 schools at the same time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. No. How does that work? Like, give me your Monday through Friday schedule, because some of us are like, yeah, we need to know the logistics of that.
I feel like I'm not nearly as busy as elementary school teachers. I will say that. Like, I am the high school equivalent because I teach so many different classes. I'm like, that's my mentality. Mm. That's what I have to do. But so we're on a rotating block. So like 1 week is 3 A days and 2 B days. And then the other week is 3 B, 2 A. It's really
okay.
Odd. But so every other day is the same. So like this week, Monday, I taught at Overland in person. And then Tuesday, I taught at the online high school. And then Wednesday was in person. Today was online. Friday was in person.
And where does the third building come in?
So then I also teach in a future educator program at a career and tech ed building in the district. And that's like one Monday every other week.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. That's where it gets really weird. But everybody's like, we don't know how you know where to go. And I'm like, I've never screwed up a day in my entire teaching schedule. Like 15 years, I've never gone to the wrong building. I've never been ready for the wrong class. I've never been surprised to walk through the door. So,
wow,
I can do it. I don't know how, but I could do it. So,
and you're still smiling at the end of a long teaching day, which I just got done interviewing Michelle, because I'm interviewing you guys at night, because obviously you're teaching during the day. It's not like you're like, you're active teachers. And apparently, I didn't know it, this is AP testing week. And Pat's like, no, Lisa needs to interview you now. So you guys are pretty much almost slap happy by the time I'm interviewing you. All you're doing is just smiling and talking about teaching.
Yeah. And you know, people are like, how do you love what you do? And I'm like, I love what I do. You know, and yesterday I was a ball of nerves because of AP tests, and I will be on Monday, you know, because we watch our kids go in and we're like, oh, I hope I did did a good enough job. I hope you're okay.
It's awe-inspiring to see when you really talk to teachers about their students, not about the profession, all that stuff. I have yet to talk to any teacher where when you mention their students, they just don't light up. Like, it doesn't matter how introverted they are or anything. They just turn into like a candy store. They're just so excited. And the fact that you're so nervous for your students who have to, you're probably more nervous about their test than they are about their test.
Well, and I tell them I'm nervous for each one of them individually. So I'm 15 times as nervous as my 15 kids.
Oh my goodness. So why do you love teaching? Like, what is it about teaching that you just love?
I love the students. I'm so lucky because in high school, most teachers have 150 kids. They leave, they never see them again. I have like 90 and they stay with me. So I'll have probably 30 to 40 in a year that I've had for more than a year.
Okay, how's that? Because you do all the classes like through their high school? Okay.
So I have all of the computer science classes and I have a 4-year program. Okay.
So some people will take like just the minimum, but the kids that are going to go into that as like something that they're interested in might be their career, you're going to have them in all their classes.
Yeah, I joke with them. I'm like, this is the first computer science class. If you love it, I hope you really like me, because it's going to be a lot of togetherness with the two of us.
So what are the most amount of classes that a student can end up with you in the course of their high school? Like if they were to take everything that you offer?
It's 3 straight years. And then there's a senior class that I don't teach, but I help advise.
But you just sit in on, because you're like, these are my people, so I'll be watching them now.
One of my students is making an app, and he'd come into my class whenever he had a question, because it was just across the hall. So I'm still involved. There were a couple of years there where it could actually be like 6. I had some people 2 times in 2 days. Like I'd see them first period on A day and then second period on B day. So.
Okay. And so computer sciences, some of us may be a little bit older, Kate. Some of us, maybe, when we were in school, computer science, and we were lucky because the public school didn't even have computers. We were at the Catholic school and we had like a bake sale or something, and we got an Apple IIe or something like that. And so we had the green turtle, which was a triangle, and you went 90 forward, right 90, forward 10 or whatever. And if you could make a square, you could pass computer class. And then you went on to high school where there weren't even computers until you got to college. So Kate, just saying, some of us might be a little bit older. What classes are our kids even taking? We don't even know what this is anymore.
Right. Ironically, that was how I started. We had the Apple IIe's in my Catholic school and I did turtle. Yeah. That was my first programming experience in elementary school. And I'm so grateful because I went on to do so much. And I got so lucky because my high school did have computer science and it was one of the few at the time. And ironically, it does not have it now, sadly, but so we're trying to get it back there. But so I teach 2 AP classes. I teach AP computer science principles, which is kind of an overview of what computer science is. So we do a little bit of cybersecurity. We do a little bit of programming, data. So like big data is a thing now, all of this privacy stuff. I love teaching principals because we get to talk all about modern, like all of the things in the news right now.
Yep.
So it's really fun and very relevant. And so that's supposed to be very, like, that's anybody who wants to know anything about computers takes that class. And they potentially could get college credit from it, which is pretty awesome. So that's the first class. And then the second class is basically an introduction to the Java programming language. And that's descriptively named AP Computer Science A. So it's the equivalent of a freshman level class if a student were to go into computer science as a major. So
Java, my computer is Java, I think. So what's the difference between Java and HTML? Are they the same thing?
Oh. So actually, I also teach web design, which is HTML.
Okay, so great.
HTML.
I know some of that.
HTML is called a markup language because it's all about markup. So like formatting things, making them look nice.
Yes, yes.
Whereas there are things you can do in Java that you can't do in HTML. So then you could do things in JavaScript, you know, just adding languages upon languages upon languages, and then make it actually do things kind of more like Java. So I teach, I guess, web design is my first programming class, but it's okay. Not really computer science. Like that's not like programming Java. It's not quite the same.
So I taught myself HTML in my WordPress website, because when you use the little drag and drop picture thing, it doesn't do what you want.
Right.
Then you would just flip it to the HTML and then I would start reading it. And then I'd start typing things in until it did what I wanted. Yep. Or I broke the entire website and then contacted my web designer and said, hey, can you just roll it back 15 minutes? The entire site, please. That'd be nice. Thank you.
I started doing that as well. Most of my friends learned how to do HTML because of MySpace.
Okay.
They wanted to make it all their own.
So I have thought, you know, because there are 8,000 degrees I could get, but I have thought, you know, it would be interesting to take a computer course and understand computer programming.
Yeah, it's very...
Can I do that as an adult?
Oh, absolutely. There are plenty of them. I've actually had two of my friends change careers and become programmers. So it just depends on what level you want to do.
It's like a jigsaw puzzle with letters.
It is. I love it. I love the challenge. And that's ultimately that's why I got into teaching, because I knew it would be a challenge every day. Whereas I didn't think sitting and writing a program all day would be that challenging.
So what I think would be so cool with adding the teaching part and going into the teaching part, but understanding the programming, is kids are so fun. Like they don't understand the limits of reality.
Right.
Like, I think we should do this. And you're like, you know, that like, that doesn't really happen right now. But also 14 years old, like when you're 14 years old, you pretty much can invent anything. Did you know that television was created by a 14-year-old boy and email was created by a 14-year-old boy? And so my dream is when I'm over 80 is to start another career. I've said this before. I think I've only said it in Embrace. Have you heard this already, Kate? Mm-hmm. Okay. So this is my dream, because I know that generations are about 20 years and generations cycle through. So the silent generation right now, that's like in their late 80s to 105 or whatever, and the kids being born right now, like Grayson, are the same makeup of a generation. They will be artistic and creative and whatever. And so because they're the same, they have like the same way of thinking and viewing the world every 80 years. I want to have this camp for 14-year-olds, boy and girls, 14-year-olds. And they will be matched up with adults who are between 85 and 90, because that adult will think the way that the 14-year-old does, and they will not limit the 14-year-old with their thoughts. And they'll be like, oh yeah, well, what about this? What about this? What about this? Because baby boomers make, that generation makes like corporate change, and Gen X, I don't know, they just mark us with an X. And then millennials make civic change. And then the generation that Joey and Abby are, alphas, they make artistic. They have an artistic outlook on the world. And so if you have people who have an artistic outlook on the world that have lived their life and 80 years of life, and then you match them up, or actually they'd have to be 95. Anyway, you get the idea. Yeah. Match them up with the people that have that same kind of thought pattern. Oh my gosh, can you imagine how cool that would be? I just think it would be like the best camp on the planet for the 95-year-olds and the 14-year-olds.
Yeah. My kids always come to me and they're like, we have this idea for an app or for a program or for something we want to build. And I'm like, okay, so let's figure out how to do that. And I try very hard not to say, no, that's not possible. But I'll be like, okay, maybe can we think about it slightly differently and come up with a more realistic solution for right now?
Or the resources that we have. But at the same time, especially when you think about technology, because let's just be honest, I don't even know how to comprehend what they're doing because I just, you know, I'm 50. But it was not that long ago, less than a decade ago, when everybody was making fun of Elon Musk.
Right.
And then they were really making fun of the rockets that got shot into the air. You know, lots of memes about that, being able to send private people into the air, what that looked like, et cetera, et cetera. And then this year, he bought Twitter. And also when the war broke out, the country of Ukraine asked Musk if he could reposition his satellites so that the entire country could still have cellular service. And he said, no problem. Ding, ding, ding. Done. Right. I mean, hello. But less than 10 years ago, that man was wackadoodle. So it's just like, what is possible is limitless. It's limited only by our human limitations of what we think. And I think that that is just teachers in general. Like, teachers believe in possibilities of the future for their students that they have not actually seen in every way, shape, and form. And it is such a unique and fun place to be in, especially when you're in that like middle school, high school age.
Yeah.
Yeah. They just believe that everything is possible and the world hasn't beaten them down yet. It's so fun.
I have a lot of students actually who are like, we don't think we have any potential. And I'm like, I see so much potential. And so I'm constantly like, I see so much potential. I'm going to get you to believe this by the time you walk out the door. And most of the time I make it. Mm-hmm.
Or when you read about, you know, like Bill Gates and the unique things that were in his high school that were not in other high schools. Mm-hmm. And how he and his buddy were able to get time on computers by spending the night in businesses. And like, I mean, all these shenanigans they did that they weren't supposed to do, but also the really cool things they did even for businesses while they were in high school, just because they wanted to program more.
Right.
Like they solved so many huge problems. It's fascinating. I love to read origin stories of business owners and people who changed the world. Like, it's what they were doing in their middle school and high school years that they just either were so persistent that they didn't let people squash them, or they flew under the radar and they didn't get squashed and they became something bigger later. It's so fun. Okay. All right. So you said that you already got the old teacher workbox. You had the, which basically was how you would organize like your teaching, which now when we did the mastermind, we realized that teachers really don't need help organizing their teaching. We're passionate about that. We need help organizing all the businessy kind of part of our business.
The admin stuff. It's so, such a pain. Yeah.
So how have you been using the teacher workbox before we had the mastermind? And then have you made any changes since we've had our conversations?
So since the mastermind, I've definitely kind of relabeled everything and really thought pretty deep about things. But so my teaching schedule is obviously really different than a lot of people. Most high school teachers teach like two classes. So they'll have maybe two sections of English 9 and then three sections of English 10. Say, I teach different classes all five periods. Sometimes it's six periods. Sometimes I have two classes at once.
Okay, wait, what?
Yeah.
You just thought you'd sneak that one in there. Okay, now that's another level. How do you do that exactly?
Well, I'm on computers. I do a lot of, this is the bad word, right? Asynchronous teaching.
Okay.
I did that before COVID, before everything changed, right? So I was making videos for classes and they would do things on their own. Because if they're busy as a teacher, I can then help them one-on-one. So it was all about keeping them kind of learning at their own speed. And so then I really could have more than one class at a time. So.
Okay.
It's really, it's strange. But so like before I started using the workbox, like I would just have papers everywhere and I color coded everything. So that was how I kept track of which, you know, what was for each class. But for me, my admin stuff, the administrative like the check that needs to go into the, or be deposited in the permission forms and all of those things. Like I would lose them in pile.
Yeah.
They'd be like, so like figuring out where everything goes was huge, and having a folder for all the things. And so that mentality has really gotten me to a point where I'm very organized, and I just take my portable Sunday basket with me to all of my schools. Whenever I go, I just know everything's in there, and then I can dump it in and sort it later. So that's like, all of that's really how I've been using it. I keep trying to figure out a way to like use a color for each class, but I can't figure out what I want my folders to be. So that changes every once in a while. So, but it's been interesting now to be like, ooh, I need a system for this. How can I make it fit? How can I use the workbox and the slash pockets to make this work?
How long did it take you to set up that system till the point that it actually worked?
I would say it started working immediately.
Okay.
I do change it often. Yeah. Probably once a semester. I've been doing the workbox planning days, and basically I'll sit and I'll do kind of all the planning, but my days are pretty set, but I'll listen and then I'll change the labels on all of my folders. And I'll be like, ooh, this color, I need this pink one or this purple one. So as this year has progressed, not only am I teaching full time this weird schedule, I also applied to grad school and will be starting my doctorate in the fall. So that was a purple holder, a purple pocket. And I also got a job as a PD facilitator. So trying to keep all of those straight, or more pockets. And, you know, so like I just keep adding things.
So how many hours a week will you be going to doctorate school?
It'll be like
that, or whatever it's called. I don't know what it's called.
Grad school. It's still grad school.
Okay, grad school. Fine. Grad school.
Probably it's 6 hours, I think, of actual like credit time, which is probably 18 to 20 hours a week.
How are you going to do that exactly?
Oh, I have my like ideal schedule. I figured it all out. I still have, you know, in my 168 hours, I still have 40 hours to play.
Like, really?
Yeah. Well, it helps because I don't have
kids. Sleep in there?
Oh, yeah. 8 hours every night.
I think two things. One, you said you don't have kids, and that's not just like a little, like, I don't have kids. It really is a big thing if you have kids. Like, it truly, you're eating up your 40 hours a week.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, my kids are older, so they are not school age. So do not, you know, glare at me through whatever you're watching me at. But it is amazing once you truly understand your roles and responsibilities at home, at work, and what you want your passions to be, and your health. You really can fit it all in when you get organized. Mm-hmm. It takes a while to get organized, but once you do, you really do end up with more time.
Yeah. I was working 80 hours, 90 hours a week before the pandemic. It doesn't even feel like I worked every hour I was awake. And I finally, I was able the last few years to kind of bring it down a little bit, but this year, my life sounds crazy. My schedule, nobody understands. And I've been working 40-hour weeks for the first time in my 15-year career.
And do you think part of it is like you have 15 years of experience? So you also know, like, okay, I've always tried to do those things. Those aren't going to happen, or it's not my thing. Like, you're more, you seem really excited about your kids. So it's not like they're being sacrificed at all. When you did the productive home solution, did you reduce some of your housework or no?
Oh yeah, definitely, for sure.
Oh, you did.
I think part of it, I was just at that place where I was never in my house. And so just actually doing it and being present in my house, just, you know, actually thinking about what goes where and what do I need to be in. Like, I did a fantastic job on my kitchen the first time around. And so now every time I'm like, ooh, this could be in a better place and stuff like that, but I'm actually cooking for the first time in forever. And you know, so I'm starting.
So you've added cooking.
Yeah. Very, very little. Very, very little. But.
So I find I continue to get more and more time, which it doesn't seem like it's even possible anymore. So I'm like, how am I continuing to still get more and more time? And I think it is a couple of things. One, as you start to work more and more in your unique zone of genius, the work happens faster. And a lot of the work for me happens like in drive time. I'll be thinking about the podcast. So when I get to the office, literally within 2 minutes, I could be starting to record a podcast, Whereas in the past, I'd have to be like, okay, here's what I want to do and do an outline. It took a long time. So a lot of the thinking now happens when I'm getting ready or when I'm driving and not actually when I'm in whatever I'm doing. So it's kind of like task stacking. And I think the reason I'm able to do that is because I have nothing else going on in my brain anymore. I'm not remembering anything, so I can think about whatever I want to think about.
Right. The task stacking piece has been really important.
Yes.
In my process too, trying to figure out what do I need to do when. That's been, now I'm half at home, so my planning has been a lot more streamlined. Basically, I was in survival mode until last year because I was creating curriculum constantly. And finally, I was able to step back and say, you know what? I'm done. Like, I'm going to use something else because I need to be present for my students. I need to enjoy the time with my students in class. And I need to, I need everything to get done. But, you know, how can I make it a little bit better? And then, you know, what can I stack together to make myself more efficient? So that's been really helpful.
I also think something else I've done in the last couple of years, you probably have done too, and I haven't really talked about this either. Now, first of all, I've been exhausted. I don't know why. It wasn't the first year of COVID. It was this last year. Yeah. And it's not Grayson because he sleeps from 6:30 to 8. Like, it's not him. But I just have been more tired. Like, sometimes I'll go to bed at 7:30 at night. But at the same time, the other thing that has happened that I have been consciously working on it since a year ago is to expand how long I could be productive. So when I first started my company 10 years ago, if I got to 1 o'clock, I literally took a nap every single day. And then I got to the point where I could work until 4, but I was exhausted. I couldn't do anything and on and on and on. And since I've been working in the office, it's been 2 years now, you know, I'm recording this at 8 o'clock at night. Now, normally I'm in a bath by 6. So this is unusual, Kate. Only because you're on a different time zone.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to interview with you. But for the most part, I can sustain my mental energy all the way until 6 or 7 without having any fatigue, which I think is partly I've really dialed in my sleep. I've dialed in what I'm eating. But I also think that I have reduced my decision fatigue in all the little things so that I'm able to do bigger things longer each day. Is this something that you have been able to do too, now that you're not trying to find the checks all the time?
Yeah, I think decision fatigue is something I really experienced so bad before COVID.
Yeah.
And I felt like I was constantly being reactive instead of proactive. And so becoming more organized, allowing myself, giving myself permission to use curriculum that other people had written.
Yes.
Was huge because I wasn't having to make critical decisions about like activities every 5 minutes in my class. And so I'm so much less tired by the end of the day and I'm less grumpy and I enjoy my students more. And it's been huge. So just being able to kind of automate some of those things and take them off my plate has been pretty life-changing.
Yeah, because even if you could find the hours, the 18 hours a week to do grad school, if you're exhausted, it doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter if we have 168 hours a week, if you're exhausted 100 of them, you have to also be able to be present in 100 of the 168. And I think that that is the secondary thing that comes. First, you get organized. So you go from reactive to proactive, and then you realize you have more time. But just having more time doesn't necessarily solve the problem because it will get taken away. Then you have to reduce and task stack the decision fatigue so that you have more mental capacity to do something bigger than you were doing before. Like, it is all this continual self-improvement that's going on.
Yeah. And the planning, like planning for my week ahead of time. So I know I can't tell myself, nah, I'll grade that test tomorrow. I'm like, no, it's on my list right now. I have to do it. That's it. Like, just knowing, I'm like, oh yeah, okay, I got to do it. I'm taking away my excuses. Got to get it done right now.
Yeah. You can go pet the cat or get a snack, but you've got to get it done before you can take the bath or whatever the thing is. So sometimes I'll be like, I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. I don't. And I was doing something right before this interview with you guys, and I put it off all day. Obviously it's 8 o'clock at night. Like, I put it off all day. And I was like, Lisa, you have 1 hour before this interview and you're going to have to stay an hour late to do this if you don't do it, because you cannot do it tomorrow. I was like, fine, I'll just do it. And then I get it done. But like, I do it too. Like, it's not like I was supposed to do it at 9 a.m. I clearly didn't, but I got it done today. I got it done on the day it was supposed to be done, because tomorrow is already planned and I can't push it on to tomorrow.
Yep.
Yeah. So what are you excited about with the new education workbox?
I love new things, and I'm a teacher, so I love to teach people new things. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I'm obviously, the system works for me, and I've been telling people about it for years now. And, you know, I send the website and the books to everybody I possibly can. So I'm really looking forward to working with teachers, because the amount of impact that I think it'll have, especially on the teachers who are the most disorganized and stressed and are losing so much energy to the decision fatigue. Like, how can I help them be better teachers and better, like, just feel better, right? Be healthier and
So, like, I know that you are one of our Education Workbox certified organizers. You said you're in Colorado. What are some of the fun things that you have planned for teachers to do with you if they decide to work with you with their Education Workbox? I want to know if I'm signing up.
So there are so many things that I do that I don't realize I do, the kind of our systems and structures that I've put in place that I think fit really well. And obviously I teach computer science and app development. Like, I'm into technology. So, you know, how can I leverage technology to do things? And one of the things that I always bring up, because I thought it was very valuable, was the email course that was part of All Access at one point. Like, that to me has changed my personal inbox, my school inbox. Like,
really?
Yeah, it has helped me manage my email. And so those are the things, like, I don't even think about it at this point, but I'm like, I want to share this with people. I want to teach my friends to be more organized, you know, on the computer and in person. So they've just, you know, it makes their life better.
So
I don't have any specific ideas other than that, but I'm like, what can I figure out to help you? So
the Productive Home Solution still has the email organization course in it. It is part of your personal organization. That's how we're going to organize it going forward as we reorganize that course. But it is, you know, I'm a teacher. So it is, you start with lesson one and you just do lesson one until you're done, which for some people who have lots and lots of email is months long. I don't care. I do not have a folder system. You have to process every single thing in your inbox. I just make you. And then I have you turn on multiple inboxes so you can have your regular inbox. And then you get to have four options. I think it's four or five next to it. That's it. That's all you get to choose. And you color code them to match your Sunday basket. And that's it. So you're telling me, Kate, that's how your email's organized? I love it.
Not quite. Like, so I use the coloring system. I have, I learned about flags from you. Like, I, as a technology, I consider pretty good at technology. I learned stuff from your course. And so I did it for my home one, looks just like the Sunday basket, but my school one has, like, I have a whole lot of folders, but I can get to inbox zero every day because every time I get an email, I just shove it in the right folder.
Yeah.
I know where it goes. So it's gone. It's out.
That's good to know you learned stuff. That course, I mean, I recorded that maybe 4 or 5 years ago, but here's the thing. If you use Gmail like a kindergarten teacher, you don't have to re-record your course. Because I use it very simply. There are 10 lessons. Lesson number one is you have to process every single thing in your inbox. Lesson number two is you've got to set up multiple. And so you could stop at two for like months and come back. It's not going to be outdated. And you just keep going until you get all the way done. And it does organize it.
It's probably the thing that has impacted my life the most, thinking about how much time I spend on email. Because it's so not a stressor anymore.
And it's not a complicated system. Once you process through it, then you can maintain it. Just like once you set up the storage room, the way I tell you to set up the storage room, you will literally maintain that for the rest of your life. Now, there's not much that you can organize. You're not going to have to change in new phases of life. But yeah, once those systems are set up and you know you've looked at everything in your inbox.
Like, yeah, I don't miss an email.
Such a weight off, you know? Like, such a weight off.
Yeah, that, like, it stresses me out when I see other people's notifications, like how many emails they haven't read, and it's in the thousands. I'm like, I'm stressed at two.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
I have two that I haven't processed. I'm like, no, these need to go away now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, to even think about having 1,000, I can't.
Yes, I organized someone who had 42,000.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me 3 months, but I read every email. Like, now I did, like, I do teach you how to, like, search for everything that's Bed Bath & Beyond and just get rid of all those at once. But I did that for, like, I'd be like, okay, this is coming in. I'd search for it. We'd get rid of those, you know, 1,000. But yeah, every email was gone through at some point. It's just like when you're going to do your filing cabinet, every mm-hmm. paper has to be gone through. You go through your closet, every piece of clothing, like, anytime you organize, guess what? Yeah. You have to go through everything in order to get it back to baseline. And then you don't let it get out of control again.
But I, as a teacher, I think people don't realize I get probably 50 emails a day.
Right.
And I probably send about 50.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot right. of in and out, and it is very stressful. So mm-hmm. having a system and knowing where things are going is huge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, Kate, where can people find your professional organizing business that you do in addition to the three different schools and the graduate degree and the professional development thing you're in charge of in the cat? What?
At least it's just a
cat. How would we find you for that?
So I actually have a website, but I teach web design and I haven't even touched it. But hopefully by the time people are listening to this, it will actually be a thing. So my company is called Organization Systems of Simplicity.
Nice.
So it's organizationsystemsofsimplicity.com, but that's a mouthful. So I go by Miss McD at school. That's kind of who I am. And that's what all my kids call me. So I also own missmcd.com.
So that'd be missmcd.com.
Yep. Okay.
Great. And so we'll have those in the show notes. And they can find you in our directory, which will be at organize365.com.
I don't know if I'm in it yet, but they will. Yeah.
Well, you know, as we're recording this, it's still being programmed in. Don't worry about that. It'll be live. It'll be live by the 27th when the Education Workbox goes live. And this podcast will be after that. So, you know, we are just working in the future right now, Kate. Exactly. All these things are magically happening right while we talk. Well, thank you so much for being a guest on the podcast. And thank you for joining me after your long day at school. And good luck to all of the students who just took and are going to take their AP exams.
Thank you so much for having me.